Comprar com certeza.
I think we have the same concerns with the previous two speakers. I'll only ask one question, that we are really happy to see the low cost, but at the same time, like we said earlier on, that it is not our intention to see mobile operators operating at a loss. What you say here is like you live from hand to mouth, you know, a welfare type of business. Moving forward, how will this affect your growth?
Prof. Kilwell?
Thank you very much, Chair. I suppose it is a similar kind of question, but I just want to put some specifics to it. Although you don't, you aren't the lowest 1 gigabyte measure price on that measure, you do have some of the best value for money bundled products. Your Supercharge 500 and Supercharge 5 Rand, etc., are very competitive and certainly come up at the top of these values. A lot of the other things that you've done in terms of embracing OTTs, your Facebook Zero, your Facebook Free Basics, sorry, no, Free Basics on Facebook, your WhatsApp, seem to be driving demand, and yet we're not seeing it translating into people kind of, you know, voting with their feet en masse. Or can you give us a sense to what degree that has positively affected your market share? And then specifically on some of the things that you are putting forward as pro-consumer, the absolutely appalling mid-contract adjustment by Vodacom to their contract customers, you responded to very positively by offering to take over those customers and take over their penalties. But when they moved on to the products, when they moved across to you, they weren't able to select the product that they went on to, obviously. And the product that you required that they go on to was certainly not one of your best value products. In fact, it was, I think, what probably attributed to the failure of that initiative. Can you give us figures on how successful that's been and how many people have bought it?
Thank you very much, colleagues, for the questions and inputs. Just to check with Saucy, firstly on your slide that speaks around what you have recently done, can I just check, because last year when we had OTT hearings, when we had the over-the-top services hearings, there was a presentation on, we didn't do formal presentation. The person who represented Cell C in that meeting highlighted that you are offering a free WhatsApp service. And now I see it's a WhatsApp bundle. Which one is it? Was that free time? Was it a promotional package at that time? And all that. And then if it was, what is this one? Is it as well a promotional package that will come and go? Just to verify that, so that we're dealing with what we know as something that is there, or if it's a promotional for now. I see you've got, because you said flat rate for WhatsApp on the other slide and free Facebook on slide 7. That's why I'm linking that with previously the presentation in the committee. Just to check, because part of what you are calling for, okay, I see the issues around what ICASA was supposed to deliver on, which they haven't. For me is to check in terms of the cost around local roaming. Who carries the cost in terms of your, because I understand part of what you are not able to do is because of infrastructure, you are not able to exist in other areas, and therefore you have to roam in other platforms. Just a detailed discussion on that, indication on that cost, and whether that cost or versus your beneficial in being part of that probe, is it beneficial for you? So that we can understand, and is it beneficial to the consumers, your clients? Thanks. You can respond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll start with the ones you asked in terms of WhatsApp. When we began the WhatsApp initiative, it started out as a promotion, which was basically free. And then afterwards, we then introduced it as a package on the CLC suite of products. So it's actually a continuing product now. It's no longer a promotion. And when we began, it was at R5 per month for the 1.2 gigabytes. And 2 months ago, we then raised it to R7.50 per month. That was in order to cater for the increasing cost of getting this data. So it is a continuing product. In terms of local roaming, the network, the Cell C, pays money to Vodacom in order for us to roam on their network because we'll be using their resources. And in terms of pricing, for rather in terms of the consumer, our prices have, we've managed to obviously then reduce our, make our prices remain low. So our margins on that are pretty low because we haven't increased the cost to the consumer. So the network has had to carry that particular pricing. However, that is the point where we said if this pricing could be regulated, it would then be cost-based, and I'm sure then CLC will be able to gain some benefit out of that. And then, Honorable Tsotetsi, you were asking how these low prices affect our growth as a network. The low prices affect us negatively. We are a capex-based industry. In other words, we need to buy capital equipment, and most of it is imported, as I mentioned in my presentation. So these low prices mean that we cannot always recoup the kind of cost that we are then incurring, and it does affect our growth. What happens is that these low prices do attract people to our network, and we continue to try to provide quality services and also ensure that we remain an attractive proposition in the market by not continuing to increase these prices. However, in terms of expansion of the network, it does make it a bit difficult because we don't recover as much as we should. So we are affected, which I think where we then referred to in our last slide, they were saying that we do need regulatory support for us to be able to manage these particular low prices and the effect that they have on our growth. Honorable Shin, you asked why it is that our revenue has not been increasing or has been going down while our market share has been increasing. I think this is more to do with the fact that we came in as a third operator and we are getting the lower quartiles in terms of the quality of subscribers. So the average revenue per user that we're getting is one that is quite low compared to what our competitors already have within their own baskets. So even though we are getting a lot more subscribers, these are more lower income subscribers, and they do not spend as much on our network and services as they would do on the other networks. Therefore, you find that we have certain packages which favor people sharing the same network. For example, if you recharge, let's say with a R35 voucher, we give you back R70 on top of that. That R70 is used or can only be used for other Cell C subscribers. That is to try and keep subscribers within the Cell C network. So people do rush for these particular packages. But as I was mentioning, in terms of the average revenue per user, because of the quality of subscriber we have, then the market share in subscriber terms does increase, but the revenue does not. You also asked how many operators we believe can be sustainably supported within a country such as South Africa. I think there was an answer that came through, a probable answer that came through two years ago when we were working on the call termination regulations. We were trying to see exactly what's been happening in terms of trends and also studies that have been done. So for a country the size of South Africa, with the GDP the size of South Africa, it was found that at most you cannot have more than four. And that fourth operator would be teetering more or less on the brink of failing to progress. So three is probably the ultimate that South Africa can handle. The fourth one can come in, but the chances of growth are limited. And this was supported by studies that we looked at back in 2014. So the answer is, from our point of view, we cannot sustainably have more than the four that we have currently. I think at this point I'll hand over to my colleague.
Good afternoon, Chair. And I'll take the question from Prof. Chris Goldwald on the mid-contact. So it's basically a question on our contact buyout. I think what we tried to do was, because of our subscriber base being predominantly prepaid, we were trying to attract postpaid subscribers. So we introduced this new product called Contact Buyout, and there was a budget set aside for that exercise. And then once that budget was exhausted, we tailor-made that product to a certain group or category of subscribers. Now we're targeting corporate with regards to contract buyout. And I think the other question that was needs to be answered was the question by the Honourable Mackenzie, the question about why are we not more aggressive with regards to data as compared to voice. I think we benefited from, or we were given the opportunity through the voice MTR process to aggressively drive voice prices, and I think we don't have the same privilege with as far as data is concerned, and we're looking at further regulatory, as we pointed out, initiatives to support challenger networks, further regulatory intervention, so we can pursue these lowering or further aggressive pricing in the data side of the products.
Done. Are you done with? Okay, because I saw you still having your heads together. I thought maybe you still have some more.
I think there was one question on the if we had access over to spectrum, the spectrum in demand, Digital Dividend 1 and Dividend 2, would we be able to further drive down the cost to communicate? I think it will be very difficult to answer because currently the spectrum process is you have to qualify, and to qualify you have to spend a lot of money in terms of the reserve price, the application fee. In addition, you have to also, in our case, for example, you would have to buy new radio access network equipment. So I wouldn't, to be honest, wouldn't be able to answer and say it will immediately drive down prices. However, maybe in the long term, there should be a possibility of driving down prices if we get access to the spectrum.
Thank you very much. I don't know if there's still follow-up questions for Sosi. We'll move to the next presentation by Neotel. From Neotel, we have Dr. Angus Hay and Mr. Denzel Brownman. Okay. can already start.
Thank you, Chairperson, honourable members and esteemed guests. Neotel actually welcomes the Portfolio Committee's initiative to continue the debate on the cost to communicate within South Africa. Notwithstanding the success of previous interventions, such as the reduction in call termination rates, there remains much room for...
Please move the mic closer
sorry, Chairperson. For improvement. Neotel, you would know, is a product of legislation, and it was there to establish a in the fixed line competition. Neotel has been able to drive down the cost of communication while delivering new technologies and substantial value to business and consumers over the past decade. However, Chairperson, you would note the fixed line sector is still dominated by a single player, and a number of opportunities to level the playing field for smaller players have been lost over the past few years, local loop unbundling being the most widely acknowledged. Chairperson, you would know that policy and legislation is an enabler within the sector for competition and for consumer welfare. And we believe coordination of policy, legislation, and the appropriate regulations is critical to for the success of an initiative such as this. Chairperson, with those few short introductory remarks, and with your permission, I would hand over to Dr. Angus Hay, who will take us through Neotel's presentation and would also field the questions thereafter. Thanks, Chairperson.
Chairperson, honourable members, good afternoon. I think we're going to perhaps give a slightly different perspective. Certainly, we're in a different position to the mobile operators. We are not a mobile operator, and I think as been indicated, we came into the sector as a product of legislation as a competitor in the fixed line space. Much has changed over that decade, but I think it at the same time there's much that still needs to be done in terms of addressing the affordability of communications in fixed line as well as mobile. So our position on this is perhaps going to be a little bit different. We're not going to present a lot of data and rather focus on some of the principles that drive policy, legislation, and regulation, but we will field questions on specifics. Firstly, just to address the matter of termination rates and the previous round of intervention with regard to cost to communicate, I think some of the other players have indicated as well, the call termination rate reductions were a very substantial driver of the ability of smaller players to reduce the cost of communications, and certainly within Neotel we did that. We have on a number of other occasions reported back to various institutions that we managed to reduce our retail prices to the market by more than half over the period of those call termination reductions purely on the basis of those. And I think that's something that had a very widespread effect. I'm going to highlight one matter which hasn't really been raised by anyone else, but I suspect it's because it's regarded largely as a fixed line issue rather than a mobile issue, and that's the question of toll-free and share call costs. Let me start with a bold statement that there is no such thing as a toll-free call in South Africa. There is policy, and there is a regulation in place that would enable fully toll-free calls in South Africa, but that in fact is not active at this point. There's still a delay in the full implementation of regulation that's in place, and there are some gaps in the regulation that has been put in place by ICASA to deal with fully toll-free. Just to explain what the implications of that are and why it is that this is an area for regulation. Toll-free calling is all about interconnect. It's all about rates between operators, but it's not about termination rates. It's about the reverse of termination rates. There are a number of terms used for that. You can call them call origination rates, if you like, or reverse termination rates. As we stand today, there are two things that are not possible under the current regime. Firstly, it is not possible to reverse charge a call between operators. And secondly, it is not possible to port any non-geographic number, such an 086 or an 080 number between operators. Now, whilst that doesn't necessarily affect the numbers of individual consumers, it has a very dramatic effect on businesses and, as a consequence, on the consumers who make use of those businesses. So as we stand today, there is very limited competition in providing the services on toll-free or what are called share call numbers in the market. It's not possible to move them between businesses or between operators, and it's not possible to charge them in such a way that toll-free means toll-free. Moving on, just in here I touch on some of the other subjects that have been raised around voice. What we do see is that voice is no longer a simple network service, and it's very much become an application. And we see today a lot of the over-the-top services which are effectively applications of voice over data networks. What that does is it changes the way in which voice is carried on networks. And I think that although the previous round of call termination reductions was based on a very careful exercise of establishing the underlying cost of the carriage of a voice call, that cost has changed. That cost has changed because the technology has changed. It has changed because voice is now data. Voice is now a service over data. And therefore, we would certainly support a further review of call termination charges. Secondly, the levels that we have for call termination rates at the moment are a barrier in another way. There's been talk, particularly by the operators today, of a number of bundles and services in the market that effectively nullify the effect of the actual call price. By bundling minutes, by bundling services, and by offering flat rate services across different operators. If you look at the underlying economics of that, that heavily favors the larger operators. The effect of bundling calls and the effect of bundling termination into those calls so that the call rate is not explicitly visible to the consumer has the gives an inherent advantage to a player that has fewer off-net calls. Off-net calls are the direct driver of the cost of termination. So a small player with a small number of subscribers for whom most calls terminate off-net will be at a disadvantage attempting to bundle and offer cost-effective and attractive bundles in the market. And so, again, there is reason to consider that with the change in the models from a pure per-minute rate towards a lot of bundled minutes, that those call termination rates are now becoming a barrier again. Then just finally, just to highlight the over-the-top, and I think this is a sensitive subject, perhaps more so for the mobile operators, but over-the-top does represent a new kind of competition. The over-the-top services are going to compete with the traditional voice services that we have. And that is going to be put a lot of pressure onto operators that have relied on high call tariffs, voice tariffs, to sustain their businesses. And just to highlight that back to what I referred to a minute ago, and that is that does drive a bundled model. But not just a bundled model across voice, but a bundled model across voice and data. And one can see a future where more or less everything is data. So that the cost of a service is a mixture of voice and data and perhaps video and various other services put together. And in those and under those circumstances, again, call termination rates become less of an issue, but they still become a barrier. They're still a barrier to because they essentially represent an underlying cost that must be paid by more so by small operators to big operators. The one area that we do want to highlight is infrastructure competition. Neotel is at its heart an infrastructure-based competitor in the market. We are, like the other players that have presented. Infrastructure-based, we're a capital-intensive business, and we have built networks. And on the back of the networks that we have built, we have provided not only retail or consumer and business services, but we have also provided wholesale services to a large number of smaller operators in the market. Obviously not represented here today, there are many hundreds of ECS and ECNS licensees in the market who rely on that competition at the infrastructure level. Without the competition at the infrastructure layer, we would not have seen the reductions in cost that we have seen. If I just give you a sense of what that consists of, and I'll show you some pictures now, but it's not just the physical connectivity inside South Africa or to the subscriber, but also the global connectivity that has made a difference so far. Now, obviously, as we've indicated, there's more to be done, but we've come a long way in infrastructure-based wholesale competition. There has been substantial investment in completing national backbone networks. I think today it is safe to say that for an ECS or ECNS operator to purchase backbone infrastructure, they have multiple choices. There is very aggressive competition between those players. It's not always visible to the end consumer, but there is very aggressive competition. And there is even more aggressive competition on submarine cables. And I will show you a picture of what has changed in submarine cable connectivity into South Africa over the past few years and how that needs to be dealt with going forward. What we have seen is that the underlying cost of internet services, and that drives bandwidth costs, which ultimately work their way down to consumers, that those prices have gone down. Not as substantially. I've given a figure of 95% for wholesale international bandwidth, and that's we do have figures to show that. The retail prices have certainly not dropped that much, but the without the wholesale prices having come down, there would not have been that drop in retail prices. Just to indicate from the end user perspective what infrastructure competition means. These are the prices of Neotel's broadband service, a broadband fiber-based service. This is uncapped, so there's no way to compare this with bundles, I'm afraid. And also, I've just normalized the graph to make it easier to sort of understand the trend rather than the specific numbers here. It's a set of different bandwidths, as you can see, from 2 megabits per second up to 200 megabits per second. This is right across from consumer right up to quite large business services, and this gives you an indication of how prices have come down over the last 4 years. And this is not the consequence of any regulation. This is purely the consequence of infrastructure-based competition, primarily between Telkom and Neotel. And to give you a sense of what that means, there is not a single component of the service that relies on our primary competitor. Not a single component. Everything, every cost that goes into this service is based on infrastructure that we have either invested in as Neotel or that we have jointly invested in with other operators. But none of the costs in here are on anyone else's backbone network. And that's the consequence of having actual competing networks. How do we actually reduce the cost? One of the key points, and I think it has been highlighted by other operators, but we'll emphasize it again, and that is that in order to reduce the cost to communicate, the starting point has got to be to reduce the actual cost. Because no matter what else you do, at some point you're sharing that cost across the end subscribers. We believe that infrastructure sharing is one of the most effective ways to facilitate competition. And we've got two very good examples, which again perhaps are not that familiar to the end user. The one is that we participated in a very substantial co-built project of a national backbone network, national long-distance network, jointly with a number of other operators, effectively dividing the cost of that network for each of the operators by three. In fact, it was effectively by four, which meant that the underlying cost for all of us was much, much lower. And that was a voluntary initiative jointly entered into by multiple operators to reduce each other's costs. The second obvious point, and perhaps also also less well known, is the investment in international submarine cables. Now, submarine cables are, by their nature, international. They cross boundaries, they cross borders. They are invested in not purely by operators in one country, but typically by operators in many countries. The four examples I've given there, SAT-3SAFE, which is actually one system, EASY, and WAX, each have between 20 and 30 parties involved in their investments, which means that for something like a 20th of the investment you would need to build, you get the same effective service. And that has brought that very dramatic reduction in the underlying cost of international services. So I think the point we really need to make is that whether it's voluntary or by some other means, there's no doubt that infrastructure sharing is something that really needs to be encouraged, because that addresses the real underlying cost. How do we ensure that infrastructure sharing happens? And I think this comes to some of the other interventions that are possible. Regulation should facilitate access to municipal infrastructure at across every level of government, but certainly at a municipal level. There is a lot of infrastructure that can be used to facilitate communications, and it's not always been available. It's not always been easy to access. And in a number of cases, it's been quite difficult and a time-consuming process to access even the simplest of infrastructure. And I think that's been highlighted again with the rapid deployment issues, which I'll come to. And then finally, just with regard to spectrum, and this is supported by legislation and current versions of regulation, is that the regulation of spectrum should be treated in some ways like infrastructure to enable pooling, sharing, trading of that spectrum amongst competitors. Because it's a very artificial thing to separate the spectrum so that there's no possible market for spectrum, because there will always be a need for sharing at that level. And at the moment, the regulation, although it's theoretically possible, there's no practical mechanism to enable pooling, sharing, and practical sharing of spectrum. And I think there was allusion today to mechanisms of sharing spectrum, even from operators to NGOs. Even that's not really possible under current regulation. Just to show you what that looks like, some of the examples. This is the picture on the right shows you what the cable systems landing in South Africa looked like in 2007. And I use this word advisedly, but it is very literally true, is that up to February 2007, there was one cable system landing in South Africa. There were a couple of older ones, but this was the practically the only one. And that was SAT-3 and SAFE, and it was, in a very literal sense, a monopoly. That was not a regulated monopoly, it was a commercial monopoly. That changed when, firstly, the SAT-3SAFE consortium opened up to multiple players, and then, I think as everybody knows, most dramatically when the Seacom cable was landed by Neotel in July 2009. That completely changed the landscape in international communications in South Africa. That was followed by the EASY consortium in 2010, and today our by far our flagship cable in the country today, which was the result of cooperation between most of the operators in South Africa, most of the large operators in South Africa invested directly in WAX, which landed in 2012. The combination of those cables and the investors in them means that there is a very, very strong competitive market for international communications at the wholesale level. That has made a very fundamental difference. If we could translate just that level of competition at that level into local access, we'd have a different picture to what we have today. So just to step through, Seacom, EASY, and WAX. Just to give you a sense of infrastructure sharing and where the cost sharing is, often when there's discussion of wholesale telecommunications and the benefits of sharing, the focus tends to be on services. I think there was a similar example given earlier today about the idea of sharing base stations or electronic equipment. The reality is that the vast majority of the cost is in the trench, just as the vast majority of the cost is in the towers and the power and all the physical infrastructure. So sharing of towers, sharing of trenches, sharing of rights of way, sharing of ducts to some extent goes 80-85% of the way towards reducing the cost between operators. Operators do not have to share their cables. They do not have to share their electronics. They do not have to entangle their systems so that it's very difficult for them to operate. And they certainly do not have to buy services from another operator. What they need to do to reduce cost is share the physical infrastructure. I'm going to talk just briefly about our view on the role of government in this. And I think this goes across the arms of government, but just to clarify what we believe has worked. Government's objectives, and I think that's a very broad statement, but let's cover many of the objectives that have been stated, are best achieved by participating in the sector on the demand side rather than the supply side. There are hundreds of licensed carriers in South Africa, some of which have struggled to compete, some of which are very big and don't struggle that much, but there are many of them and they can invest, they can compete, they can make things happen, but not when they're competing against government. So our view is that where there has been intervention from government as government, rather than as legislator, so as the administration, it has been as a purchaser of services, through competitive bids, through making those operators viable, through big public-private partnerships, and there's some good examples of this, where there's a purchase component, and where that purchase component has gone into better government services and a reduction of cost to end users. You could call that a subsidy, but effectively reducing cost to end users. There are examples of that that have worked, not just in South Africa, but we have them here too. And so if one looks at government generally as an anchor tenant of networks, government can make new investment commercially viable where it would not otherwise be. And I can give a very simple example. You can pick a rural area in South Africa, look at any smaller towns, villages across the country, and look at the viability of deploying infrastructure to that town or village without government purchasing and with government purchasing. If government entities, police stations, the various other entities that are present from within municipalities, the service centres that service the population, as a purchaser of communications, they can facilitate and make it possible to deploy where otherwise there would not be demand. And that makes a very big difference from a point of view of investment. Then, obviously, from a regulatory side or from a policy and regulatory side, government has a very key role as a facilitator. And that's both removing barriers to investment, but also, and I'll touch on this, enabling the deployment of infrastructure. And then finally, I think this has been mentioned before, is the Universal Service and Access Fund is clearly a tool and a mechanism that should be used where it's not commercially viable for a normal, conventional, commercial business model. And there's certainly examples from other countries where that has been done, and it's something that I think has been sorely lacking, is real targeted investment and effective investment from the Universal Service and Access Fund to make investment, to make networks viable where they aren't. Just to talk about rapid deployment, and I think this is cuts across the board for all operators, but I think as a fixed line operator, we feel it in particular. We strongly support the rapid deployment policy process that's being undertaken by DTPS. We believe that that needs to result in regulation and also in a lot more coordination at various levels. The greatest challenge that we have in deploying fixed line in the country, unlike mobile, is the lack of local access infrastructure. We have a very small percentage of what we need to have in local access infrastructure, and it's only going to happen if we can deploy more and rapidly. And that kind of policy is what makes it possible. Just to give you a sense of some of the delays, and these are just examples, and we've had these obviously in all our deployments, environmental impacts, the impact assessments, although they're obviously necessary in a number of cases. The period for typical environmental impact assessment is 18 to 24 months, which is a very significant delay in deploying infrastructure. Water use licenses, it's an unbelievably large number of water use licenses are required for almost any kind of major network rollout. I can give you an approximate number. On the national long-distance network that we deployed, but on the route between Johannesburg and Durban, which is roughly 600 kilometers, there were roughly 600 water use licenses required, each of which took up to 24 months. Rights of way in municipalities, I think it has been raised before, is a very variable thing across municipalities. We can provide some detail to that, but although the time periods there are reasonable, the actual processes are very varied and not all very efficient. There's a lot of issues around what information is provided, who provides, or what information is underlying that. And therefore, rights of way for simple deployments. Bearing in mind, in a fixed line, just to make it clear, if you want a mobile service, you walk into the shop, you buy the 99 Rand handset, you plug in the SIM card, and you walk out of the shop. To do the same thing in fixed line is a 30 to 40 day process before you can put a spade into the road. The access to property by landlords has been more problematic. There are issues of land rights there, and there are just practical issues of access to private property. We do have the Constitutional Court judgment of last year, which has essentially ratified the Electronic Communications Act, at least the sections that provide for access to land. And it's provided a level of certainty, and I think it has made it a lot easier in principle for operators to deploy, but there are still practical difficulties with access to private land. And it's, in many ways, it's not just private land. It's the same sort of issues are present in municipal areas and municipal land, although those are better dealt with rights of way. Just to give you a sense of what would make a difference, and this is by no means exhaustive, and I would refer back to the extensive studies that are being done by DTPS, as well as quite a lot of work which has been done by the Fibre to the Home Council and other bodies on what would help to enable rapid deployment of infrastructure, and here I'm talking particularly access infrastructure. Firstly, some kind of regulatory controls on the process of way leave application, such as timelines, how long it can take. Coordination amongst operators, which in some municipalities does happen, and obviously with other stakeholders, there are multiple other services in any location. The proactive sharing, and there are municipalities that have very strict policies of sharing. So if a length of road is to be dug up, it is typically dug up once, and that's something which a particular municipality does, is ensure that there's coordination. It's not the case in all municipalities. We do have frustration sometimes with state-owned companies with access to infrastructure, not typically in terms of refusing access, but really process and urgency. Coordination, there's some practical coordination here. I'm going to talk more about fixed line infrastructure. So, for example, standardized forms of ducts and configurations. Hugely advantageous would be databases, a database of infrastructure, just knowing what's where, and with controlled access, obviously. And then simplified automated ways of processing applications. So the typical concept would be that you can apply for a way leave, and if you don't get objections within a reasonable period of, say, 10 days, you can proceed. That does presuppose that everybody has information at their disposal. So we think there's a lot that can be done that's not necessarily directly in the realm of telecommunications regulation, but that can go to enable the overall reduction in cost to communicate. Just in conclusion then, I must emphasize, and I think Neotel and its decade-old existence and our current market position and our ability to succeed in the market is, and at the same time, I must emphasize, I haven't given any numbers today, but I think you will find that if you look at our actual costs in terms of basic voice calls, our costs in terms of data, that we have been amongst the leaders, not always the lowest cost, but we've certainly been very aggressive in pricing, that the competitive fixed line market, and this includes all those smaller operators that we don't see here today, has resulted in a reduction in cost to communicate, both voice and data. not to the extent we like it, but it is the competition that has driven it down. However, this being the telecommunications market, there is a need for some ex-ante regulation. And just to give you the example, and just to put that in the context of competition law, really typically regulation of significant market power rather than across the board. So we do feel that there is scope for further reduction of call termination rates, particularly in the light of the fact that voice is no longer really voice, it's becoming more of a service. The toll-free and share call framework is years late and needs to be done together with the porting of those numbers. The access to infrastructure where there's significant market power, we haven't alluded to that much, but there are situations where there are players that have significant amounts of infrastructure that could be shared. And again, I'll emphasize that the real issue here is physical infrastructure. It's not always about sharing the electronics or the systems. It's really more about ensuring a sharing at the practical physical level. Policy legislation and regulation to enable rapid deployment, we've spoken about that. And then we've spoken also about the spectrum sharing and trading that would make it a lot easier to deal with the spectrum that is already available. As a general stance, and I think as a smaller player in the market that has to compete, beyond those ex-ante regulations, we feel that less regulation makes it easier, and more incentives make it easier, and those could be incentives by way of, for example, government playing a role as a buyer and an anchor tenant in communications. So that, in conclusion, is Neotel's submission, and we'd welcome questions.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I think it has been quite insightful. It has gone to a different angle of the area, and I think it's really appreciated. Members, I'm going to open the floor for comments, questions. Honorable Shin, the first one. Honorable Ndongeni, Honorable Zodetsi, Honorable Maseko, Prof. Gilbert. In that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Listening to you and what we've been through for the past 2 days, there's been a lot of emphasis on mobile data and the access to it and cost of it. There seems to be, perhaps we should be looking, or consumers should perhaps be motivated to look at a mix of fixed and mobile data. Because one thinks particularly of the presentation we had yesterday from the University of the Western Cape, SRC, that perhaps the students there would be better served by having high-speed fiber access to the campus and then a more efficient Wi-Fi network. Obviously, that helps them on the campus. It doesn't help them when they're trying to study off the campus. But the presenter did say that if everybody on the campus logged into the Wi-Fi network, the network died because there wasn't enough capacity. So one sort of wonders if there isn't a need for more agility, should we say, customer agility, to look for a sort of mix of how that data is retrieved. Because you know, there are obviously the challenges, and there seems to be an awful lot of competition, very healthy competition, happening in the cable market. And one thinks of obviously of all the fiber to the home installations. Those are primarily going to the wealthier suburbs and the gated communities. But you know, one thinks particularly of some of the municipal rollouts in Cape Town and obviously Tshwane and Joburg also are moving in that direction to use you know fibre to link facilities in the poorer and marginalised communities. And perhaps a huge infrastructure emphasis on being able to use those facilities and people realizing that they can use fixed access to data might actually be part of a mix that would help them get better use out of the internet. And wondering, Neotel, are you actually going to try and compete in the fiber to the home market? Are you active there? And what are your target markets particularly, and how, should I say, invigorating are you finding the competition?
Thank you, Chair. Okay. In your presentation, you have emphasized with infrastructure based on a lower cost driver. What do you think of service based in competition? Secondly, Neotel is operating in urban areas. If so, what about the rural areas? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think one of my questions is covered about the infrastructure in rural areas, as it has been a challenge in many presentations. On rapid deployment, you know, one doesn't have a, you know, proper clue on the processes here, that what is actually being done. How is the process that can take 18 to 24 months, like applying for a license to take also 18 to 24 months. What is the really the process that it takes so long? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think the other questions on rural and fiber to home were covered. I was just checking that in the past few weeks we've been receiving messages from Telkom on the fiber to home process, and just to check where Neotel is in partnership, because their emphasis and their angle is more on partnership to lessen the costs. But also on the issue of the submarine cable growth, I just wanted to know, you said in 2001 there was just one. So as to by May 2012 or as now, how far are you and how many? Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Prof. Gilbert.
Thank you. I know that it's getting very late. I just wanted to ask you a few questions. I think it actually affects all the operators, and I think perhaps it's just something we should note for this committee, is the lack of transparency on wholesale pricing. So a lot of us have spoken about the importance of it as an input cost. I think we know that with the introduction of the undersea cables, the competition in undersea cables, what used to be the 80% of the ISP costs turned into the 20%, and the 80% is now the national transmission costs, but we don't really have a good sense of those other than they have gone down. What we do know is that the prices haven't always gone down, but people are getting more bandwidth for what they've got. So in terms of small prices for end users, you often don't get that carried through to end users. So I would urge this committee to try and get some transparency on those wholesale prices, which have not even been successfully used in public processes by ICASA. I know within the work that we've tried to do for SADC, the open access project, an infrastructure sharing project, the data was simply not available from South African operators. They just refused to provide the wholesale data pricing, even under confidentiality agreements. So we really don't have a sense of that wholesale pricing and how competitive it is. The other thing I just wanted to mention, I think it's just important that your whole description on the role of government is actually describes directly SA Connect. SA Connect requires that this be the role of government. And that was in 2013. I would like you to respond to what degree the anchor tenancies, the use of government purchasing power in order to reach underserviced areas, etc., has been implemented. I'd also like to note that the rapid deployment guidelines, which were already devised at the time of the first meeting of the now defunct Broadband Council, were already ready from the Fibre to the Home consultations that had been done with DOC as it then was. So perhaps if you could just talk about what you see of this as being implemented and what hasn't been, and perhaps we can flag that for DOC to, for DPTS to respond to another time.
Thank you very much, Prof. I think I'll give it to you to respond to the issue.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to address the questions in the order they've come up, so if I miss one, just let me know. Perhaps just to address the question of the role of the mix of fixed line and mobile, and I think it's a consequence of a history in South Africa where we had a very, very low fixed line penetration rate. When we compare that with many other countries, the starting point, even when competition started in countries, there was much higher fixed line penetration rate. And obviously in South Africa we have an historically very skewed fixed line structure. It's perhaps a little bit disingenuous, but ours was the first post-apartheid network built on the fixed line. And it really does show in the geography of how the network is built. I must indicate that, yes, we have started our investment, and we started very much from the major centres and built out and the connections between them. And I'll give some indication of why that was and how we've addressed that. But just to indicate with regard to what the role of fixed line is with regard to, for example, Wi-Fi on campuses and Wi-Fi within precincts that government can control. There is quite apart from the ability to do fiber to the home or fiber to the business, all networks are ultimately fixed. All networks ultimately have a fixed backbone. It's really only the last mile, the last connection to the customer, which is either mobile or something else. And I think you'll see that there is a huge potential for Wi-Fi to be the last mile, Wi-Fi to be the connectivity. We're seeing that starting to unlock. There are a number of initiatives across different, mention was made of Tane, mention was made of some of the other initiatives, where Wi-Fi can become the last mile, provided that somebody's investing in the backbone and core networks, provided that there's some mechanism that is purchasing and building those backbone networks. So yes, absolutely, and I think there's no question the economics, the fundamental economics of a fixed line network are different to that of a mobile network. That's why, you know, in many cases we're not even talking about things like bundles. We're talking about speeds, and that's because of the way that fixed line networks physically work. They can deliver more, and there's no good reason why it's not possible to deliver as much bandwidth as is required over a fixed line network. It's not constrained in the same way as mobile by spectrum. And in terms of actively competing in that space, I think there's not a lot that needs to change fundamentally from a regulatory point of view, but I think a lot of the other things that we've spoken around about facilitating the deployment of infrastructure and certainly from the government side, from the side of being more than a facilitator to being a purchaser, to driving, for example, pre-Wi-Fi initiatives. That, I think, makes those networks be built. And I'll come to an example of that now. The question of the lowering the cost of infrastructure and Neotel rolling out in urban areas and then not addressing rural areas, maybe just to indicate that at a very practical level, we came into the market, if I just draw the comparison, in the mobile market, there were two competitors that entered the market maybe 1 to 2 to 3 years apart, plus another one which came another 5 years later. In the fixed line market, we had a competitor with a roughly 100-year lead, and we were the first to be licensed to compete. It's a very, very high mountain to climb. We believe that we've done a credible job in climbing that mountain. We have made the significant investments from the top down. We've put, I'm going to count this in dollars, but it's rough numbers, in excess of $100 million into submarine cables. We have put a total investment of roughly 7 billion rand into the South African market in backbone infrastructure that we've put in. And we've slowly worked our way out, starting from the major centres and working out. Our long-term plan, and remember we're only 10 years old, our long-term plan is to extend beyond that. It's to grow further. And certainly on the back of being able to compete in those markets and grow, is to grow further. We've had to come up with tactical plans. We've had to come up with ways to compete. We've always had to compete against an incumbent and a market which is much bigger and much more widespread than us. There are two primary ways we've done that. The one has been to try to leverage a mix of both infrastructure and services-based competition. So we do, where we have to, make use of other parties to get out. What's interesting is not so much the fact that we've worked with other parties. It's in some cases who we worked for. Some of our major projects where we've gone beyond the urban areas, We've worked with very small companies. We've worked with a group of players that go under the heading of wireless ISPs. There's an organization called WAPA, the Wireless Access Providers Association, which has something like 300 members in the country. They are the unknown players in the internet service providers domain. Many of them work in rural areas, they work in smaller towns, they roll out infrastructure, they spend the kind of money that you heard referred to earlier for some of the other rural initiatives. There are commercial players that are operating viably as ISPs, internet service providers, in many of those areas. We have partnered with those in a number of cases to extend. Right now, we believe that we can reach a high percentage of the total country via those players, working together with those players. And we have one large flagship project which has demonstrated exactly what we can do, which is with particularly the Western Cape provincial government, where the fiber has been rolled out into the metro areas. We've worked very closely with government on that. But in the rural areas, we have worked with a number of these smaller players to essentially extend the reach of fixed line networks to places that would not otherwise have fixed line networks. And I think just to give a sense of the scale for that, that reaches, and we're a large percentage of the way towards this, I can't give you exact numbers, but we are very close to completing the project of connecting 2,000 schools on fixed line internet infrastructure, delivering not just a few megabits per second, but up to 100 megabits per second to schools across 2,000 schools. And that's an example of how, with the right combination of investment and partnering and extending, we can make things happen. All of those players suffer from the same challenge as any other of these fixed line players in terms of rapid deployment, access to infrastructure, in some cases access to spectrum when you're talking about wireless connectivity. Those challenges are the same for all of those smaller players as for the bigger players. The other thing that we've done, which, as I said, is we have where we are a provider to the providers. So in many ways, we are the top of the tree when it comes to, for example, internet. We're what's called a Tier 1 internet service provider. On a global basis, we extend into a global Tier 1 network. And we are also an originator of voice connectivity in and out of South Africa, as well as backbone voice connectivity between players. Many of the smaller players interconnect their voice through our network. So we're really more of a wholesale provider to those smaller players. And so if I look at our actual reach, the number of end users that we reach via our customers is many multiples of the direct customers on our network. That mix may change over time because of the increased investment, but we find that we have been able to make a big difference by being that larger wholesale backbone and core network provider, and particularly when it comes to internet and connectivity to the internet. And just to emphasize, in the context of the internet, it's not simply about cables. It's about content. There was allusion made earlier to Facebook. We work very closely with a number of the players in that space to reduce the cost of getting that content into South Africa. Now, just to name them, Google, Microsoft, Netflix, Facebook, possibly Amazon. There's a number of players that have significant amounts of content that can be in South Africa, but we're trying to bring into South Africa and where we have successfully brought into South Africa. To talk about the processes, without going into an exhaustive detail on all of the different processes that are entailed, I think the key, and this applies equally to things like water use licenses as to, for example, simple rights of way, EIA processes. What's really needed is a look at those processes to see what components of those are, I wouldn't say not necessary, but perhaps can be made much quicker. If you think about the fact that we had to go through 600 water use processes between Johannesburg and Durban, clearly there's need to look at the process and find a quicker way to go through that. There have been jurisdictional issues, and in the case of water use licenses, there have been concerns over jurisdiction between provinces and national, and that's caused more confusion and delay than actual legal problems. So yes, these processes, without going into the exhaustive detail, each of them has their own process in legislation, but there surely are ways to shorten some of these. Some of them are not mandatory periods. Some of the EIA periods are mandatory periods, but not all of these are mandatory periods. They simply are delays within departments. To fill in the picture with South Africa and submarine cables, at the moment we have 5 physical cables which extend on the west coast into Europe primarily, touching quite a number of countries up the west coast of Africa. On the east coast, we have 2 primary cables which also touch many countries up the coast and then into Europe and into the subcontinent of India. And then there's a cable which crosses across the Indian Ocean into the Far East. Between those 5 cables, we probably have sufficient cables physically. We almost certainly have sufficient bandwidth. There's more than enough bandwidth available on those cables. And we have short enough physical routes. What we possibly don't have is, and maybe just as a nod to Professor Allison, is that maybe we need a little bit more transparency on who's competing how at a wholesale level, because the competition is effective, but it perhaps could be better. The point about SA Connect, it is interesting to try and compare the goals of SA Connect with the reality. I think we've been vocal on various occasions that what's needed is implementation of a number of those in very real practical projects where arms of government actually go and put out tenders and physically get things built. The primary example I do have is the one big contract that we do have, which is the Western Cape government. I must just emphasize that in concept and certainly the way we approached that contract, or that tender which became a contract, we adopted many of the same principles that are in SA Connect. I think some of the principles that are in SA Connect are almost universal. They have to be like that. That's the only way to do it. And so the principles that we adopted about targets for bandwidth to places and things that need to be connected, and how you then roll out over time to get to those places, and the kind of public-private partnership, and also this mix of partners that I'd spoken about. To me, those are universal. They can be repeated. The models can be repeated. We've worked very closely with CETA on similar projects, but not quite as extensive across the country. Taking those models and repeating them will get us a long way to getting increased infrastructure that will support increased competition. The question around service-based competition, I think it's as simple as the chicken and egg. We can have service-based competition. We have service-based competition. But if you look at the service-based competition amongst, let's call them traditional ISPs, the copper-based ISPs, that's been on the same physical infrastructure that reached 1% of households. There's got to be more infrastructure. There's got to be fiber built. There's got to be more fiber to the home, fiber to the business, fiber to the anything built. And we have to find ways to do that. And we feel strongly that there need to be ways that do that that are simplified, incentivize, and also place government as the facilitator and the demand side of that equation. Have I covered everything? Sure.
Okay. Any further follow-up? I think this time of the day is here. It's very difficult. I can see members. Honourable Mackenzie, you're still with us. It has been a long day. I think. Thank you very much for your presentation. It definitely does give a different side from what we've been focusing on. in terms of the issue. And it's nice to hear, especially on the side of infrastructure sharing and how it helps to reduce the cost and deal with the cost that we're looking at. Perhaps it's something that we should be able to look at when we deal with the issues around mobile operators, but as well to look at even some of the areas in terms of cost. Because majority of the people, though it's still a lot in urban areas, mainly your Gauteng and your Cape Town, that focus on trying to get fiber to the homes, that market that you are in, more than in the rural areas, majority of them who still rely mainly on the 3G. I think when we have a discussion, we should have a much more informed discussion when we deal with the broadband rollout, some of the issues that you've raised here, which assist in that discussion. Really appreciate that. Thank you. Team Telkom, we are on the last presentation, colleagues. It will be led by Mr. Mahlangu, and the team, I think, will allow him to do the introduction of the team, and then they can do the presentation as well. Okay, over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chair, and good afternoon to the committee. Chair, I am here with my colleague, Ms. Lisa Rousseau. Ms. Lisa Rousseau is our head of group pricing and competition regulation. We're also assisted by Mr. Pindile Jani. Mr. Pindile Jani is our executive responsible for government relations. And we also have Ms. Kamenita, who's our parliamentary liaison. She's over there. I don't know why she's deserting us. Chair, as the day has sort of almost ended, one is not about to belabor the points that have already been made by other operators, but we will try and just eliminate some of the points that we believe may assist the committee in its deliberations. Just as a point of introduction, Chair, I think that the need to lower cost to communicate, we can as well describe it as a question of motherhood and apple pie. And I think that the issues that face us now is taking into account our circumstances as a country. Where should we, if we look at the full conspectus of all these complicated facts and circumstances, where do we place the right level of affordability? I think that is the question. And we think that that question needs to be resolved with a very sober and critical analysis of where we find ourselves. Today, we're experiencing a slow-growing economy. We've got a highly competitive environment. We've got issues, some of us, with what we look at or at least regard as policy uncertainty and regulatory instability. We're looking at issues where we think that they are very serious. As operators, we have rising costs of physical infrastructure, whereas on the other side, we're looking at the pressure from consumers for faster internet, but at cheaper prices. We're also experiencing a pressure from the employee side where they would like higher wages despite the realities that we're facing. We have a very temperamental exchange rate where, you know, depending on what's happening in the country or elsewhere, things tend to go sideways or south. So those are the issues that we are looking at, and they must concern us. But as Telkom today, we think that the contribution we can make to this debate is that as we discuss cost to communicate, let us not be forever backward and looking at the rearview mirror. Let's look where we're going. The whole world is discussing the fourth industrial revolution. In February, the World Economic Forum told us the benefits and the threats and all sorts of things that come with this fourth industrial revolution. Recently, I attended the CETNEC conference in George, And one of the issues that were discussed there were things about big data and the Internet of Things. And they, the predictions are that by 2020 going on, we will be encountering about 20 to 30 billion connected gadgets in the world. And that will require a lot of capacity from network operators. And that will require a lot of investment that must be done right now in preparation for those kinds of eventualities. Because that talks about the jobs of the future, the relations of the future, how we organize our society, and so on. So as we look at these costs to communicate, let's look at building a sustainable industry. I mean, if you look at what is being suggested by the ITU in one of its papers, they say that as many as about these 25 billion gadgets that are going to come to the market from 2020, the market revenue expected from there will grow to about $1.7 trillion. So that, to me, is the new economy. It's what, as the country, we should be looking at and we should be worried about. So as we balance, we strive to find this balance between cost to communicate, lowering cost to communicate, promoting competition and promoting investments, we should not lose sight of the future. So that to me is an important observation that I think the committee may want to interrogate further as we go deep into the cost to communicate. Chairs, as Telkom, we do support the cost to communicate, and we have done a bit on our part. And as we have seen that the yearly income from the ICT with telecommunications contributing about 61% of it, it's around 240 billion rand per annum. So we need to look at what does that mean for all of us. But for us, we thought that let us empower, I mean, from some of us when we're discussing what was the convergence bill then, the issue has always been, how do we make sure that there's efficient use of infrastructure? People were talking about how do you share infrastructure and so on. We've had that. So what we have done as Telkom, we have functionally separated our operations of how we work. We now have OpenServe. OpenServe is a dedicated wholesaler from Telkom, and that's where then we try and enable the players in the downstream to have access to the infrastructure on terms that are not less favorable to what we offer Telkom retail. And by doing that, we're trying to make sure that there's more competition on the services, and that as competitors increase on the services, that maybe there will be better consumer choice and there will be better prices as a result. But just as a response, I think, to one of the submissions that have been made by earlier presenters, when you talk about infrastructure sharing, let us not limit it. It could be sharing of physical infrastructure. It could be efficient use of existing infrastructure. So let us look at what, for instance, if you go into a gated community, there's already a person with infrastructure there, and you need more. But, you know, do you need to go and trench again? And then, what needs to be done? Do you need to share the manholes and all of these other things? Why, if there is capacity on that network, why don't you purchase capacity? If there is need for transparency there, why don't we work on methods of making sure that transparency is available to everybody to make sure that things work properly? That's I think the efficient use of infrastructure and infrastructure sharing should not be seen as opposites. They should be seen together, and depending on what's happening, then we can make proper choices. I think as we go forward, I will respond to some of the questions later on, which arose from some of the presentations. I will hand over to Ms. Rousseau to take us through some of the discussions we have on our presentation.
Going down to,
we will just move to slide five in the interest of time.
Okay. Basically, what I'm going to be discussing is the developments in the wholesale space, where, as Mr. Matlangu indicated, we now have OpenServe as a separate entity which is in place to empower service-based competition. As was noted by Nia Telworth, we do have infrastructure-based competition in the market as well, but Telkom, as the traditional provider of wholesale services, is taking very seriously the ability to compete effectively in the service space. And if we look at our products, since April 2015, or for the last financial year, the unit prices across the wholesale product range have decreased by 63%. That's quite significant. Also, sites by high-speed broadband prices, more than 25% per annum since 2013. One of the big complaints that's always arisen with respect to Telkom is the price of IP Connect. And ISPA would have raised what's happened in that space. The year before last, we decreased the price of the entry speed IP Connect by 82%, and again this year by another 57%. What this has done is it's enabled smaller operators, smaller ISPs, to be able to compete effectively in the market and pass on savings to their customers and businesses. And you would have noticed how at the service level prices have decreased quite significantly. Then we go on now to look at developments in the retail space. For Telkom, these are Telkom figures, all prices have decreased. Our calling rates per minute have decreased. The only exception, as Mr. Mhlangu indicated earlier, is because of the exchange rate volatility, because of termination rates being higher in international destinations, we've unfortunately had to increase the prices for calls to international destinations. But I'll go further to explain to you how we've got a new product on the market which allows for WhatsApp calling, which seems to be the way that people are going in terms of making international calls. Fixed to mobile calls, as you can see, the reduction in the termination rates has had benefits for consumers in that Telkom has managed to be able to drop its fixed to mobile rates. On the next page, we've got mobile minutes of usage, the effective blended rates. This is per month since April 2015, and you will notice there is a downward trend in the blended effective rates for Telkom. Again, a nice sharper decline has been in the blend of effective rates per megabyte. And this is where we have realized that there has been a movement from voice telecommunication services more to data services and to empower people within the data space. So in the data space, we've got to admit, as a small player, as the fourth entrant, we've had a disruptive effect in prices. Although we're small, we've only got 2.7 million subscribers at the moment, I think the big operators are considering what our pricing strategies are and reacting to them. We've had, from a small base, we've had an increase of 54.6% in our subscriber numbers. And we've also, not only in terms of pricing, but in terms of service offerings, we've introduced new ways of doing things, like we have month-to-month contracts now. You're no longer locked into a 24-month contract. And we've also introduced FreeMe, where we accept that voice is transmitted over data. So it's not separately as it was in the past. And what we do is, on-net calls, because we're small, we can afford to make those free. We've also got our SMSs, which are free. So you can make 50 SMSs per day. Telkom Wi-Fi hotspots, we've got 5,500 Wi-Fi hotspots where you can access data for free. And then calls, as I mentioned earlier, WhatsApp calls, you can make WhatsApp calls to international destinations. BBM and Viber do not form part of your data package, but you can make calls up to that. And as Mr. Cole indicated yesterday, it's very low data usage on for calling, so you can make quite a few calls based on that. Okay. If we look down, Mr. Mhlangu will now continue with what are the threats that we've encountered in lowering the cost to communicate in the mobile space to start.
Thank you, Ms. Rousseau, and sorry, Chair, if we are rushing the presentation. We will gladly take any question, but we're also sensitive of the time of day. I will enter the subject that tend to excite the sensitive, which is spectrum. I think much has been said about spectrum, that spectrum must come into the sector, spectrum must be released, and it should unblock, and it will make everyone's life better. That's partly true. But from the telecom perspective, we think that spectrum, depending on how it is handled, because spectrum, it is a gift and a curse, it can actually make the situation worse. So one of the things we need to remember about spectrum is that spectrum is a natural, national, finite resource. So when spectrum is released, it must be released on such policy underpinnings that it promotes competition, it results in the lowering of prices in the long run. Our view is that as it stands, the ITA, as we have read it, it tends to disregard the new players, it disregards the smaller players, it entrenches the duopoly, and in the long run, it is likely that it will result in fewer customer choices and therefore the ability of the duopoly to raise prices. So we think that there must be particular policy care and regulatory rigorousness. I mean, there must be rigor in how you deal with this. And that you can get if you've obtained our views as operators. If you issue a draft ITA as ICASA, then we will be able to tell you what the economic implications of what you're trying to do is. So we think that in the discussion over spectrum, let's try and deal with that sensitivity. Make sure that spectrum promotes broadband for all and spectrum promotes the national policy objectives in SA Connect. That's what we would be keen to see. And then the next issue that we think we should look at when we discuss the spectrum is that historically people would know Vodacom was a subsidiary of Telkom, and as such, as things started, the question about sub 1 gigahertz wasn't an issue. After Telkom disinvested from Vodacom and started ATA, which is now Telkom Mobile, we do not have sub 1 gigahertz, and therefore, some of the issues we want to do, we have to do them with extra hurdles. Why is sub 1 gigahertz important for us? Sub 1 gigahertz, members of the committee, is important for in-building penetration, is important as a coverage spectrum. It gives you pace. And as it gives you pace, it means your cost of deploying base stations is slightly much more affordable because you need lesser cells. So if you don't have it, you need repeaters, you need more routers, you need more cells, you need more base stations. So your costs of competing with the other operators are higher in terms of network. So that's why, in our view, as we discuss all of this, let us not forget the history of the sector. Let us balance the playing field and make sure that Telkom can compete fairly. We need sub 1 gigahertz so that we can all be on the same footing. Then on the next issue is that historically as well, Telkom has obligations to make sure that its infrastructure reaches the length and breadth of this country. But in some of the swaths of land of this country, there is no business. But because we are selling the line, the cost of maintaining that line results in what we call the excess line deficit. And that there's been very tentative regulatory thinking on it. But it's real. It's there with us. It's in our books. It affects how we do business. It's part of our input costs. But no one else is carrying it because they've got newer infrastructure. So we think that if there is a regulatory recognition of this excess line deficit, that will at least try and address some of the costs that we carry and which sometimes our customers have to also share in that burden. So what would we recommend? What we recommend is that there's too much clutter and noise in the air. Everybody comes with a different study, OECD, ITU, everywhere else, and their own consultants and some other think tank and so on. But there is no general consensus from the public body in charge of the sector. We think that ICASA must take care and look at Chapter 10 and conduct the market reviews that it must, conduct the public consultations that it must, document the outcomes of those studies, so that as we discuss today, we know how the market is defined. We've heard Dr. Hay talking to us here and saying there's a fixed market, there's a fixed line, there's a mobile, but in essence, the markets are no longer like that. The mobile companies are rolling out fiber, which is fixed. It's a different market than it used to be. So let us look at it, let's define those, and let's define what are the input costs that we can't do anything about in this sector. What is a realistic level of affordability? So that's why we are calling for these Chapter 10 inquiries of ICASA, and that then Parliament, once those things are clear, can then oversee these issues and ask us questions based on that kind of evidence that's available to it. And same as CELSE, we support the regulated national roaming, but of course we think that there must be as that regulation is put together, the major operators who are providing this service to us must also be able to put what is fair to them, and we should be able to put what is fair to us, and then we should be able to see where that takes us. Because at the moment, these issues are not sensitive to the cost to communicate, but only to the commercials amongst the operators. So we may need that to introduce that public interest element into those discussions. In our view, the cost of national roaming should be cost-based. The question of sub 1 gigahertz spectrum I'd already mentioned, and I've already touched on the recognition of the excess line deficit. But also then we need to look at the fact that as the mother operator in the country, we have been the people who have been connecting everybody. So there's a tiki box in every village, but now the tiki box has been superseded by mobile phones. No one uses the coin thing anymore, except for certain institutions like prisons. But whatever happens, we still carry the cost of the infrastructure going to that public phone. And the costs of that USO are quite serious. So for us, if we are to be agile and be able to be more innovative and bring affordable products and services, we'd need that kind of burden to be lessened on us so that we've got equitable universal service obligations like all other operators. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members of the committee.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Noting that at that time, and I noticed that you ran through, but I think members would have gone through the presentation and colleagues who are here. Just to take hands, Honorable Mackenzie, Honorable Ndongeni, Honorable Mukwena, okay, those are the hands. Honorable Mackenzie's part.
Thank you, Chair. I've only got about 33 questions, but I'll confine it to three. In your presentation, you say in order to level the playing field, Telkom be assigned a sub 1 gigahertz spectrum. I would say that the playing field is uneven because you disinvested in Vodacom. Perhaps you should have held on to that investment and then, you know, you wouldn't have the need for the spectrum. But that's just a comment. In terms of infrastructure sharing, if you had an infrastructure sharing model, if there was a sort of regulatory environment that encouraged that, would you still then need access to this sub 1 gigahertz spectrum? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Mackenzie. Honourable Ndoyen.
Thanks, Chair. Only one question. One of the prolonged discussion has been the local loop unbundling. In order to lower the tariffs, what is the Telkom take on the local loop unbundling?
Honorable Mukwena.
Thank you, Chair. I think by way of final comment, and input into this, you know, Telkom is in a perfectly aggressive protectionist economy. This is the organization that, you know, the country should invest in. To give comprehensive competition to the so-called big players at the moment, and because the disparity between the two, the small players and the big players, is what is giving way to this huge margin that results in these huge costs to communicate. So in making myself finally unpopular in this house, I would make the concrete suggestion, comment, input, that the space that everybody seems to be fighting in is in sharing facilities. And perhaps this is where government and parliament and legislation should play a part in order to allow the service providers to play in another space, in the service space. Because I think once they fight themselves amongst each other, there we'll begin to see a reduction in prices. So, concretely, I would suggest, that we legislate the sharing of facilities. That is one, so that we are playing in another economy. Two, we have to legislate the provision of telecommunication services in the rural areas, as it is our responsibility as Parliament to ensure equitable distribution of development means. Those are the two things. It seems to me that we're not going to end this discussion until service providers stop fighting each other over facilities. So let's close that gap so that they can then fight in another space, and then our people will then benefit in lower costs. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to find out on the development in the retail space, where you spoke of the introduction of the Free Me in July. So the free Wi-Fi hotspots, where are they? Are they mostly in rural areas or mainly in the metros, or are they everywhere? If you can just clarify that for me. And then the last one, it's on the threats to lowering the cost to communicate. You're saying that in the process of finding ways to decrease the excess line deficit, you are in the process of decreasing the access to line deficit. So what are the estimated timelines on that particular one? And lastly, Chair, I just want to say, maybe Telkom is supposed to be taking the center stage and the space. Actually, they should be the lowest, and because they're Telkom. And I mean, also take into account that you are the only ones with the landline facilities and infrastructure. So it's expected more from Telkom, and especially from ordinary people, and also at an affordable price. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, members. I think for me, part of what I've been asking throughout, what you have listed in one of your slides, where you talk about developments in the retail space, the free on net calls 50 free as introduction of free me in July. Is this a promo or is it a normal price tariff, so that we can understand in terms of where you are sitting? We noted the issues that are raised in terms of what is the issue of 1 gigahertz for Telkom to be able to play in the playing level field. I think that would basically be left to ICASA. Yesterday, ICASA said to us, and I see one of your recommendations, the first one, ICASA to conduct a Chapter 10 inquiry into competition in the broadband market and associated pricing. Maybe just elaborate why you think this is important for ICASA to do, because from what they were saying, they were looking at priority, what is the word? They use priority areas or something, so that we can understand from where you're sitting, because it looks like most of what you're recommending here are the issues that have to do with the regulatory regime. So just want to understand that one in terms of the ICASA. I don't see any recommendation that is mainly directed to ourselves. So I'm safe to assume that you seem to be thinking that most of the work needs to be done by ICASA, and if once they do that, it should resolve the problems that we currently face in terms of the cost and ensuring that we have competitive price, or affordable price, actually. Is that correct with? Just over to you to respond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll share the response with Ms. Rousseau. I'll start with the question that you have raised on the Chapter 10 inquiry. Chapter 10 inquiry is supposed to deal, at least address the economics of the sector, the issues of competition. So these things tend to arise in different settings. Whether you're talking about how spectrum is going to be assigned, whether you're talking about the question of mobile termination rates and so on, these things tend to arise. For example, Chair, do we have a market for voice? And in that market for voice, is there a discrimination between fixed and mobile voice or with the OTT voice? Those are issues that when technology has developed and life has developed, those are issues we have not addressed. So if we have a comprehensive understanding of the economics of this sector, then Parliament will be able to provide proper oversight and the executive will be able to come up with proper policies. So from our perspective, it is important for the sound economics and stable regulation of the sector that ICASA conducts these kinds of inquiries. And Chair, we have raised these issues that are mostly directed at ICASA. We understand that ICASA accounts to Parliament. And therefore, when we've raised these issues with Parliament, we are confident that Parliament in its deliberations will also see how ICASA at least is engaged on those matters if ICASA has different priorities. Maybe ICASA will take Parliament into confidence on what should be priority and when this is likely to be addressed, because it seems to come up over and over again. And therefore, we thought that it is prudent that we elevate it to Parliament. But going back to Honorable McKenzie, there's been debates about the wisdom of a wireless open access network. It was in the last two drafts of, in the last two draft ITA, in the last draft ITA and the policy. And the discussions are not final, the jury is still out. But what we can say, infrastructure sharing by itself, active infrastructure sharing does alleviate some of the issues you're raising. For instance, if we have to look at it in different ways. We can talk about infrastructure sharing in the mobile space by talking about active RAN sharing, because that gives you much more advantages than national roaming, regulated national roaming. You're able to put your own equipment and run your own things and control your costs. On the other side, with national roaming, it's slightly different. You depend on the roaming that you're given, and you cannot choose the sites in the manner that you want, where you want to be. So theoretically, yes, depending on the detail. And then responding to the question about LLU, we think it's an issue that has been overtaken by events largely. Telkom offers the access equivalents of LLU, such as Bitstream and IP Connect, and the operators and service providers can buy that service through OpenServe. And actually, there are other, if they engage OpenServe right now, there are other innovative solutions that OpenServe is working on, which sort of takes away the need for LLU. So I think that also, if you think about it, I think that LLU is counter-modernization, because they want the last copper that goes into a household. But actually, we are putting what is called the NGN, the new generation network. And if we do that LLU on that, then you're going to prevent us from implementing the NGN. Then to the next question was on excess line deficit. On the excess line deficit, we're continuously working on it. It's something that is there because we're carrying this legacy infrastructure and it hikes our cost. We don't have a timeline on it. We've introduced efficiencies where we can, but it's a very stubborn cost. And when we engaged ICASA, they started seeing, I mean, if in some of the submissions we've made during the call termination rates, ICASA started appreciating some of those difficulties. Hence, when they dealt with the rates, they were able to sort of, to an extent, address some of those issues, but the issue remains stubborn. I think the next question was on the free me, whether it's a promo, and the question whether the Wi-Fi hotspots, I think Ms. Rousseau will handle that.
Thank you. In terms of the Wi-Fi hotspots, we obviously intend to roll them out as far as our network goes, but we've started where we find there's the greatest, going to be the greatest uptake. So we've started in the urban areas, in where our TDS shops are, and into community centres. We're aiming for hospitals, police stations, where people congregate the most. In terms of the FreeMe, we filed it with ICASA. It is a permanent introduction to the market, and it seems to have quite a good uptake. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other follow-up question? Honorable McKenzie, Prof. Gilbert.
Thank you, Chair. Just the wonders of telecommunications. Somebody sent me a WhatsApp saying, I need to pose a question to the portfolio committee. Why is Telkom charging for calls to an 0800 number? I am a servant of the people. And
nice communication of messages. Prof. Gilbert?
So we've heard over the last few days that these wonderfully low prices that Telkom offers, Telkom Mobile offers, and Cell C in fact, are not actually available to many rural communities. Within the context of infrastructure sharing, around spectrum sharing, what are the possibilities of Telkom and Cell C in particular, who are not available in many of these communities, entering into partnerships with some of these community networks or these communities who are trying to establish networks to use that spectrum in that area and actually get access to these low-cost services?
Chair, can I just... I'm sorry. No, wanted to find out on these SMSs that they are sending Telkom on a weekly basis, Telkom is upgrading infrastructure in your area for an even better service experiment. Is it to? It's for rolling out the fiber. Oh, okay. But is it optional when you send it to me, or is just to inform me as a telecom subscriber, or because I saw one, I think the other will indicate if it's like it's optional or something like that.
Member at the back.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Mine is only one question. I'm trying to check the possibility of introducing a flat rate. I mean, I'm sure you will know that in places like Canada, there is a flat rate which is paid by each and every household because we are dealing with the cost issues. So I'm just trying to check if you have ever thought about that.
No, I was trying to be sure. At least my mind is still sharp. Okay, those are the questions, colleagues. The last one was posed by Honorable Mbinda.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'll start with the question from Professor Gilwald. Certainly, we would like to facilitate that discussion between OpenServe and the community networks, and then I'm sure if there is any possibility there, then it can be explored between OpenServe and the community networks. On the question from Honourable McKenzie, Honourable McKenzie, I think that that relates to the discussion that's taking place on toll-free. We are the guys that run toll-free. For instance, let's take a big corporate will be our customer. And then people call our network. And that's how. So the question is that when they call from Vodacom or MTN, despite it being toll-free, those operators will then charge them a fee. So that's a question that properly should be posed to the other side of this hall. So we don't charge. And even in the new regulations, there's a new framework where everybody must zero rate the toll-free. It must be free in the hands of the caller. So I think that starts on the 24th of September.
Motion.
We had a presentation yesterday from ISPA on, and it was mentioned the toll-free numbers. And the problem with it, if I understood the example that was given, was that it's all very well to be free to the caller, but if the call is going to an NGO that's providing a public health service or a crisis line or something like that, the cost of the call from Telkom to whoever picked it up to the enterprise or the NGO is that they pick up the cost. The NGO picks up the cost, not the caller. And I remember Mr. Cull saying very clearly that is that fair? One can understand that if the free call is going to a business, that the business could pick up the cost, not the caller to that business. But if the end call is being to an NGO, which is actually relying on handouts to survive, is it fair that the origination cost is charged to them?
So this means, like, for example, if somebody's suicidal, it's calling Lifeline. So Lifeline picks up the cost. Okay. And what's it?
Yeah, thanks. As you mentioned, the Lifeline, I was just going to talk about that, and the 1023, 1026 lines. And if you want them to repeat the number, they say at an additional cost of 1 rand.
I think let's try and address the toll-free issue. I think the toll-free issue is that the numbering regulations and so on are proposing a toll-free framework that kicks in on the 24th of September. So
that it is that means that the submissions that were made when Nicasa was considering the revision here inadvertently or somehow omitted a discussion on these social institutions. So I think that maybe Chair Ikasa can be asked to have a look at the calls that are destined to social institutions and so on, and see how those can be resolved with a discussion with the sector. Because there's usually a very lively discussions amongst the operators on matters of that kind. And I think that that could form subject of those discussions.
Just on that one, I think as well the department, if I'm not wrong, in terms of the ECA, I might have to check, that responsibility lied was within the department of establishing a national toll-free line. In terms of ECA, that was the responsibility of the department. And it actually gave specific directives to the Director General of the department. To say the Director General, I'm just trying to, it's there, ne?
Yeah.
The Director General of the department needs to ensure that I can try and find it, but I remember it very well. That's the responsibility. I remember very well. While we will look at the issue of the operators and the discussion with ICASA, I think the department needs to take up and implement what is their responsibility. Okay, you can proceed and answer this other one.
Okay, the other question was on the flat rates. We are considering flat rates. If you think about it, we've got calling plans on our fixed line network where weekender calls are free included in the price of the bundle. The Free Me also has packages where there are unlimited calls on certain of the packages. So we are moving in that direction as well.
Sorry, no. Okay. The other thing that I wanted to know, for instance, you know, I was saying in places like Canada, each and every household has got a telephone line and they are paying a flat rate. Have you ever thought about introducing that more especially in South Africa so that each and every household in South Africa, get a telephone line where they will pay a flat rate? I mean, by doing that, we'll obviously be dealing with the issue of the costs.
Over to you so that we can conclude.
Chair, I think the it's well and good that we look at these other jurisdictions, but let's also look at our peculiar circumstances. Is that when mobile telephony was introduced in the country, the level of fixed line penetration was not as high as in some of the countries in the Americas or in Europe. So it's easier for they move from a higher base than we are. And our country is riddled by inequalities. So you will know that the person in Mganduli somewhere will not be able to get access to that telephone line in the fixed spaces as easy as a person who's in some of the urban areas, but they would have a handset. So the issue, I think, for us, prioritize the spectrum and mobile reach for now, because at least you're guaranteed to reach a person quicker than you would.
If I may add, Chair, is that I think we might be aware that the access to telecommunication services and access, those are moving targets. Whereas, Mr. Matlangu said that we started off by giving a fixed line services to everyone through in villages as telecom as well as households. But with the development of technology, this target is also moving now. We've got the new generation networks. So now the issue of making access to people or to giving the masses access to telecommunications has moved steadily. It was mobile telephony. You can access the services in your pocket as you go. I think now these moving targets now allow us to look at new problems faced by people so they can access telecommunications. The issue of households, it might be a different context now. Canada, it has it, as CIA said, and the Americas, they are quite advanced in ensuring that access to telecommunications given to the households. In South Africa, it's slightly different. As I said, that these are all moving targets. We need to embrace those developments. Thanks.
Thank you very much for the responses and the engagements, colleagues. I think it has been quite fruitful 2 days, intense and engaging. That was our last presentation. What we'll do with the team, we'll put together the report that will serve before the committee. I think when we come back from recess, we should be able to find time to adopt the report and send it to the National Assembly for adoption. We'll look at avenues, possibly request a debate in the House on this matter so that we can deal with it properly and have parties as well in support of our report. I'm hoping that all parties will support our report after the 2 days of work so that it can be adopted with our recommendations. I think the other issue is for tomorrow, members' visit to the undersea, let's call it properly, undersea cable with Telkom. We depart at 9:30. If we can meet outside Port Tate, it's around 9:15 outside Port Tate, so that we can leave at 9:30 with the transport. That's our arrangement. Members to dress comfortably. Casual shoes so that it's not uncomfortable as you move, I think, around the areas. So we'll see each other tomorrow for the visit. Thank you very much, members, and thank you for all participants, all those who have written, made sure that they make their submissions. We really appreciate it. For those who took time to be with us in the 2 days, engage with us. For the colleagues who made presentations, thank you very much, and for the teams that have been here, media and everybody else, thank you very much for, and the team that put together these hearings, thank you very much for all the work. The meeting is adjourned, colleagues.
The presentations below on the website.